Before we commence today's sermon, let us take a few moments to remind ourselves how incredibly fortunate we are to be received, Lord, with these teachings. And also, let's take a moment to pledge our allegiance to Supreme Buddha, the Compassionate One, the winner of all of his own defilements, the all-knowing one. And also, let us realize how lucky we are to be listening to the Supreme Dhamma to help us liberate ourselves from our own sufferings. With having such thoughts in our heads and minds, let's take a few moments to worship the Supreme Buddha by chanting the Namaskara 3 times all together and with me.
Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa.
To start off, I want to remind you how lucky we are to have found a paradise almost, where we're able to study, understand, comprehend the Dhamma. What I mean is, it's almost as if the world is covered in darkness. Covered in a thick fog or a thick veil of darkness, where you and I, we can't see a distance. All we know is, well, we don't know what's around. And the Buddha comes into this world and gives us light. He lights, you could almost imagine, he lights the first candle. The moment he lit the first candle, light emanated. And now, the people near this candle are able to see, are able to navigate, are able to be free from bumping into things, free from hitting other people, free from getting into accidents. Because why? They can see. But what they don't know is, the moment they come near the candle, they themselves light up. Now, so for example, first candle was the Buddha. Then we had who? Then who do we have? Anya Kondanya, Maharatan Mahansi. And that candle did another candle, another candle. And now we all are able to see. Thanks to your teachers, your candle is either lit, or you have the light of your teachers to see around as well. So we are incredibly lucky. If it wasn't for the Buddha, just try to imagine where you would be. If it wasn't for the Dhamma, where would you be? If it wasn't for the Mahasangha, the noble triple gem, where would you be? And you can say, you know, I mean, if I was to talk about myself, I have no idea where I would be. Thanks to defilements, who knows? Thanks to defilements, who knows what's going to happen? Who knows if you weren't able to find the noble triple gem, what would happen? You, we normally think very great to ourselves, thinking that, you know, if I wasn't have a Dhamma, maybe nothing bad would happen. Maybe life would just go normally and I'll just die as everyone else. I'll just pass away just like everyone else. But who knows? The other day I remembered, I think either something that I've seen in real life or some video I've seen, can't remember either one, but it was a line of ants, and the ants were walking, marching, one by one, hurrah, right, forwards into, I think there was a light bulb that was short, and one ant went inside, and unfortunately dies. But when it dies, something with the current makes it release a pheromone saying, come, 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 everyone else come. And so the person, the ant behind, comes in and, you know, they like burns. And the ant behind burns. And I think the entire colony of ants marched one by one to their own death. And when I remember this, it just came to me that this is just like ourselves. Now, you can take this example in many levels. So you can talk about minds here. But I want to talk about humans or people. Every time a person will grow up and will do whatever, become whoever, and on their deathbed, they'll say to their successor, I have found something. I have almost found what? Happiness. Almost found it. Go in my path, and you'll find it as well. So what does their successor do? The exact same thing. Right? They do the same thing. Or they may change it, but so maybe their parents were, say, doctors, but they wanted to be lawyers. They may change their career path, but their search is the same. And they go in, they fall into the same pit, but then they tell their successors, I had almost found it. I had two houses. Successor, three houses is the key. And therefore, successor goes on, tries to get these three houses, can't, and then, well, it tells its next successor, you know. I remember that there was a, can't remember who told me this, but there was a person whose mother had told him, Puta, gold is valuable. Obtain as much gold as you possibly can, and you'll be happy. And so what does this boy do? He grows up to, I think it was a story someone told me, but he goes, I don't think it's real, but he goes around stealing, goes around tricking others, trying to grab as much gold as possible. Because why? The person in front of him said, do this and you'll be happy. Do you see how helpless or even hopeless these ants were? Because the ants had no idea what's happening. Just followed the person in front. Just followed the person in front. That's all they did. But they fall in the same holes, same traps, same everything as the ant in front. Because they'll only see that ant just once. Because why? As they go forward, and they fall into the, or they fall onto the wire, they'll never see the ant again. When your parents pass away, or when your heroes pass away, do you get to see them again? But they pass on saying, you know, I was a millionaire. You can be a billionaire. Do what I did and you can be a billionaire and you can be happy.
But once they pass away, do you get to see them again? I remember, I think it was a video maybe, but I remember there was one ant, just one ant, who I think lost its path, started to roam randomly. Now, if you were to look at what the other ants were saying, they're probably saying, "Oh, idiot, right? He's not following everyone else. That ant should be coming with us." But wasn't that ant the lucky one? Because why? It's not going to its death, is it? And hopefully, maybe another ant will follow. But the chances of that happening are next to zero. Because why? The pheromones? Pheromones are so strong. Not letting them escape. See, this is why we are so lucky. We somehow, for some reason, had a faint scent of someone who went off this path. Thanks to our merits, we went on that path. Who knows? Maybe we'll fall. Maybe we'll fall. If our merits aren't strong enough, if for some reason we aren't able to achieve Nibbana in this life, maybe we'll fall, but next one, we'll try harder. I remember as a small child, whenever we went somewhere, or in a car, like I used to have an imaginary friend with me who I looked outside, who used to walk by the car. I think it's something that children normally have, right? That when they're in the car, they have someone running beside them. And it's like this, right? So I used to imagine it jumping from car to car. If we can't attain Nibbana on one life, who knows what about the next? But for that to happen, we have to accumulate the conditions for that to happen. So when my imaginary friend jumped from one car to the other, he may not get what he wants done. But if he has the conditions right, it doesn't matter when this table ends. It doesn't matter when this road ends. Because why? Next time? See, we have to remember how lucky we are. Just like these ants marching, we have found a release. Just how everyone shows us, you know, this is the path to happiness. This is how happiness works. Eat chocolate, you'll be happy. Do this and you'll be happy. Become a doctor, lawyer, an engineer, and you'll be happy. But now we understand that is not happiness. So we're not following the ant in front of us. Instead, we're following a different path. A path away from the trap. A path far away from the trap. This one leads to, you can imagine it leading to home. So we are incredibly lucky. All thanks to who? All thanks to who? Two things. You can actually say two things. What's that? The Samma Sambuddha and Kalyana Mitras. It was funny because yesterday, just in case some of you may not know, but Guru Handra is back, right? So Guru Handra went on, I think, a 3-week tour around several countries, and he came back yesterday morning at 2 a.m. I think, and he wanted to give us a message after he came back. So around 4 in the afternoon, all our monks, Anagarikas, Anagarikas came together, and he said, which is very interesting. He said, the Buddha, of course, will always tell the truth. But let's say one day he says, you know, instead of anicca, he says nitya. He says, instead of nitya, he says anicca. For some reason, he gets it muddled up and does that. The one thing he will never get muddled up is when he talks about Kalyana Mitras. If one day he says, Mahanini, the sasana is completely not dependent on Kalyana Mitras, then you know something's wrong. Then you know something's off here. That noble association is key. Noble association is essential. See, even the Buddha himself talks about it. No. So we talked about noble association last week as well, but this week I want to talk about noble association about yourself. One being noble, nobly associating oneself. Because attahi atano nato. Only you can help yourself. No one else can. Only you can help yourself. I don't know about you, but I remember I used to have this feeling that, you know, I have people. I have friends. I have family. If I need help, they're there. If I need help, they will always be there by my side and they'll save me from all troubles. But can they? You're in pain. Can someone take half your pain away? You are stressed out. Can someone say, Mahathir, sir, I'll take half your stress away from you. Give me half your stress. Can you do that? When a mother bears, or when the mother has a child in the womb, she's in pain. Can the father be like, mother, or wife, give me half the baby. Right? I'll help you with half the baby. I'll carry half of her weight. Half of their weight. Can they? Whether physical or mental, only you can only help yourself. There is no other person in this world that can help you but yourself. So how can you be a noble association? How can you be a noble association to yourself? Because there are sometimes where we don't realize the trap that we fall into. That our own mind tricks itself. Let me give you an example. Someone's telling you off. Right, you've done something wrong and someone's saying, you know, you've done this wrong, don't do this again. Sometimes we feel, let them scold. That's okay with me. Right? Because once they've stopped, then I can live on as normal. Because it's only temporary. Meaning, you know, like, what we sometimes do is we justify our vexations. For example, sometimes, let's say, best example, sleep. You wake up, the alarm goes off, and then what? You know, yesterday I didn't get a good enough sleep. Yeah, I just had, you know, it was I had a rough night yesterday. Not enough sleep. Another half an hour. Another 5 minutes. Jojen, you know this very well, right? You go, Amma, another 5 minutes. Mom, 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 just another 5 minutes. That's it, there's 5 minutes more. And then I wake up, I promise.
Yeah, right.
You wake up in 5 minutes? No. You see, because our mind tricks itself, and it gives, it justifies what we did. It makes up its own mind. Our mind makes up its own mind and says, you know, I did this because of this. I'm vexing for this reason. For example, I this cake. You're not hungry, but then you think, you know, it's a cake. Mm. You know, actually, if I eat this now, I don't need to take dinner later. I don't need to take a meal afterwards, so I'm going to have the cake. Justifying the reason why you're having cake. Forgetting what? That, you know, I'm vexing here. I have a problem here. I'm feeling so much pressure here. Instead, you're just justifying it. You're just saying, you know, this is how it is. Because our mind doesn't like thinking that there's a problem. Someone comes up and says, look, you have an issue. First thing you do is try to find 101 reasons why you don't have that issue. Right? For example, you know, if someone calls you short-tempered, what do you do? Find reasons, say, no, you know, last time they did this, I didn't get angry. I'm not short-tempered. Because why? We don't want to think that, you know, we have an issue here. There's a problem here. So our own mind does the same thing. It justifies itself. It says, you know, you are doing this because of this reason. Let's say there is someone that you like associating. That you like associating. Maybe because they're good. Maybe because, you know, they praise you. It can happen, right? Because they're praising you, or they're funny, or whatnot, and you like associating them. Instead of your mind seeing that you have a vexation to associate them, what does your mind do? They're a good Kalyan Mitra. You know, whenever I make a mistake, they've never shown you your mistake, but you say, you know, whenever if I ever make a mistake, they'll show it to me. They are very good, noble associations. And this can go to an extent where you don't realize the other person is, what they're doing is wrong. Sometimes, right? There'll be a person where they are very good. They're very good. So, Let's acknowledge that they are good, right? However, when they do something bad, sometimes we dismiss their bad stuff. And we say, no. They did that because of this. And you justify for them. Because why? Your mind doesn't like seeing that, you know, someone that I like has done something wrong. For example, mothers and fathers out there. When someone comes up and complains about your child, don't you have an excuse to say? A teacher comes up and says, you know, your son or daughter hasn't done their homework. Sometimes, I have seen this happen as well. Parents will go and say, that's because, you know, teacher, we're moving house. And therefore, they probably didn't have enough time. Why? Because they don't like seeing either themselves or people around them who they like to be put down. So what do? They justify. Now, look at your own mind and see if you justify things as well. Because this is where your own mind tricks itself. Does it justify itself? So, you don't like going, say, just take the monastery. Let's say you don't like going to the Valley Malur, right? The Valley Malur, because, you know, it's boring. Because all you have to do is sit down and walk and sit down and walk and contemplate. But contemplation can become boring sometimes. And therefore, you don't like going there. See if your mind makes an excuse, justifies it. So you can either, you know, go to the Valley Malur, right, and meditate, or you can do some merit activities. See if your mind goes and says, you know, these merit activities, you know, we need merits. right? We need lots and lots of merits. So that's why I'm going to choose the merit activity, not go to the Valley Mall, not start practicing, not start contemplating. Now, there can be this feeling that, yes, I need merits. But see, if you're doing that just to justify not going there, if you're looking for 101 excuses not to do something, for example, I'm sick. Being sick is one thing. So let me justify that. Let me also justify your own minds, saying that yes, you have physical things. So you can be physically ill. You may have a physical issue, and you can also have other things as well. So, for example, hunger. You can't stop hunger. I agree. However, see if you justify yourself and say, I didn't have anything sweet today. Right? Who knows? I may not have enough. I may not have enough sugar in my blood. Therefore, I'm going to eat this chocolate. I'm going to eat this sweet. See if your mind justifies itself. So, if you do know, because again, this is where your mind can trick you. And it hides all of your vexations under, you know how when you ask little kids to tidy up, what do? They get everything and they stuff it somewhere. Either behind a door, under the bed, in a cupboard, they just go and they stuff everything there and they pretend nothing is there. So when you go and look in their room, like when you just look over their room, it looks very clean. And you go, Uta, son, you cleaned your room, well done. And then you open a cupboard and everything falls onto you. You look under the bed and all you see is like a 3-month-old sandwich just sitting under the bed. So our minds do the same thing. It sweeps some problems and sweeps it under the rug. Because what is easy? Finding the answer to a vexation or relieving the vexation? Which one's easy? Relief. Because why? All you have to do is, I want to do this, do it. I want to eat this cake, do it. Easy as pie. However, what is harder is, contemplating, thinking about it and thinking, okay, why do I want to eat this cake? And looking at and seeing about, seeing ignorance and attachment and all this, and practicing the path is hard. Therefore, you take the easy solution and what you do is you sweep the rest. I'm eating this cake because I'm hungry. Even though 2 minutes ago you had a good meal. An hour ago you had a good meal, you're pretty full. But instead you sweep it on the table, sweep it under the rug and say, I did this for this reason. Because if we don't see what we are doing, if we are not aware about what we hide from ourselves, then you are trying, it's like healing a wound, putting medicine on the top of the wound where inside it festers. Like the other day, someone had a splinter in their foot. Now, I don't think he knew that it was a splinter, so he just thought it was just some small, just a cut or something. And so what he does is he ignores it. He puts a plaster on top. Come back a week later, and inside it, there's it's bulging, and it's red, and it's infected. And when he goes to and cleans it, he realizes, there's a splinter in that. I should have taken the splinter out and got the splinter out and medicated it. Instead, if we heal the surface inside it festers, and you can only cure it or only medicate it once, it's become infected, it's become it's painful, it's swollen, there's pus coming out of it. Now you think, oh, there's a problem here. But before that, there is still a problem, but we can't see it. For example, in our own minds, don't we have this feeling that, you know, I am a person who practices Dhamma. Oh, I'm a very good and virtuous person. And so when someone comes up, the first thing you do is you compare your qualities or your virtuousness. And you decide whether you are above them or below them. For example, someone comes up to you and they say, you know, color isn't in the object. Now that depends on who and your reaction or your response will depend on who's telling you this. How? It's a monk who's telling you this. And you'll be like, yes, Abhyam, this color doesn't. Yeah. Say someone who you feel to be, you know, the same as you. So someone says, you know, color is not in this, and then in your head you'll be saying, I know that. Color is not here. And then you start saying, you know, color, yeah, I know, color is not in this. Now if someone below you, say a child comes up to you and says, uncle, auntie, right? You know, the color is not here. Color does not belong here. The color is not here. It goes in your mind. And you say, sit down, Putta. Let me tell you. Yes, Putta, you are correct. And now you give a half an hour speech on something that they've said. Why? Because you feel that you are above them. You feel that you have a better understanding than them, and therefore you want to give something to them. Now, yes, giving something to them is a good thing. No matter who, it's a good thing. However, you feeling that you are above. You see, this battle of ego or pride is a hilarious battle. It's hilarious. Because if you don't realize what's happening, but it's just someone says something else to someone else. But when you realize it's ego at play, now what happens is it becomes very interesting. So for example, there are two minds. Right? When these two minds meet, when these two minds come and meet each other, one mind thinks that it's more superior. The other one mind thinks that it is also more superior than the other mind. So if one person says, I want, let's take the color example again, color doesn't belong here. It manifests in the mind. Now, if the other mind thinks it's more superior, what happens? Now, that's it. Now they will find, they always would either try to say something more advanced or try to look for a mistake and say, color is a manifestation. Because why? They want to show that they are bigger, they are more superior. And so they say that, you are trying to look for something. For example, a child comes up to you and starts to talk to you about Dhamma, right? They say, they think, today I learned this. I learned that everything is a manifestation. Right? See if in your minds you are looking for a mistake. Because this happens a lot. Always looking for a mistake so you can go like, that's very good. However, over here you've made a small mistake. Because why? Now you think in their mind they'll be thinking, oh, this person, they know so much, they have so much understanding, so good. But instead, what's happening is, the person is filling up with ego. Yes, ego is something that is only eradicated at the moment of arahatship. I agree. But ego is also something that delays our journey. It's like having an anchor on a ship. If a ship has an anchor, it's stuck in that position, right? So, if this is a ship and the anchor is here. So if this is a ship and the anchor is here, now it can no longer go this way. But where can it go? All the way around. In this zone. Ego is like a light anchor. What I mean is, if it's a heavy anchor, it's stuck here. I agree. But if it's light anchor, now if this engine is put at full throttle, it will move very slowly. So after this boat is trying to go at like 100 miles per hour. Oh wait, kilometers per hour. 100 kilometers per hour. Because of the anchor, it's only moving at 2 kilometers. No. Meters an hour. So it's putting in so much energy. However, it's not moving due to its anchor. But it can feel that I'm moving. Sometimes it can feel that it's moving very fast, but it's only diverting somewhere else. Because why? It can move horizontally or in a circle way, in a circular pattern or circular way. However, it's not going to its destination. Because ego is something that makes us stuck in a position. For example, this is why usually if someone becomes famous, like for example, these actors, actresses, singers, and all these famous people, whether they're rich or poor, whoever, if they are famous, there are always a group of people that would say something bad about them. So they'll be like, so this person, yes, he's rich and famous. However, I know that, you know, when he was younger, he did this. And this person's 40 years old, but at the age of 5, he kicked someone. You use that and you say, you know, he's not a good person, is he? Because why, at the age of 5, when he didn't know what he was doing, he kicked someone. Because why? We were looking for something. Something to make us feel, you know, same or better. When I was 5, I didn't kick anyone. So, you know. I remember I used to have this. When I was an LA person, I used to have this really big jealousy. Whenever I heard someone who was famous that was my age, then you think, oh, they're famous. I'm not famous. And so you think, you know, they're famous. So once, you know, they're famous because they do all this stuff. Like, they do bad stuff, therefore I'm a good person. So, you know, I don't want to be famous. Why? Again, you're trying to justify what? But, you know, I don't want to be famous. I don't want to be famous. Instead, I just want to be myself. But in the back of your head, you're thinking, if I was famous, if I was famous, if I was an actor, right, I'll be better than who, this Tom Holland, right? Or I'll be better than this other person. Why? Because this mind is under so much pressure to find to make itself feel there as an entity that is better than others. For example, ego isn't always about being first. So have I told you all to get in line? We can't say the person who's at the front or who always tries to go to the front has more ego. Why? It could be the person who's at the back. Because aren't there always people who says, you know what, go to the front, I'll stay at the back. Go forward, I'll stay at the back. You know, it's a, you guys all go, you people all go forward, I'll stay at the back. That is also what? You know, I'm letting everyone else go, so I'm a very good person. Or it could be, you know, I want to be front, but I don't want to be at the front, right? At the, like, number one. Number three, number four, that's a good number. Because if I was at the front, then everyone will think that I'm very over-enthusiastic or have a big ego, so I'm going to go number three. I'm going to be third place then in this line. So even then, our ego wants to make a place, wants to give itself a place and says, you know, I'm over here. I'm over here. And therefore, it makes it difficult for us to be, well, for two things. For us to be students, and number two, it's difficult for us to accept nature. For example, right now, let's say today, as I have a guest speaker, today I'm going to give a chance to one of these 18 minus or 13, these noble hearts children to come up and do the rest of the sermon. Now, what would you think? What would you feel? Now, of course, because we are all on this journey, sometimes we'll feel, what a great thing, sadhu, all this. But in the back of my in your mind, think, do I feel like, okay, fine, I'll listen to this 10-year-old talk and give this speech. Okay, fine. Because this is, or if I say, you know, today we are great, very fortunate to have Guru Handru come up and give us a speech. Now everyone will be, Guru Handru? Oh, okay, great. Because why? We're not able to accept nature. Accept what is given to us. Accept what is there. So whether it's Guru Handru, whether it's a 5-year-old, if they come up and they start talking, they are giving you what you are supposed to be receiving in that moment. That is your vipaka that you're supposed to be getting. But no, instead you have this barrier and you say, you know, if Guru Handru says something, I'm listening, this 13 minus, now you'll be like, this 7-year-old is giving a speech. Oh, so cute. Instead of thinking about what are they trying to say? They maybe Guru Handru will be talking about, maybe he'll give a description on what he did in his tour. Good for your merits. But this 7-year-old maybe saying the most profound thing that you've ever heard, something that you need for your next step and on this journey. 7-year-old though. 7-year-old Guru Handru. 7-year-old Guru Handru. We always think, Guru Handru. However, we're not able to accept nature. Therefore, we're like this boat. Yes, listening to Guru Handru will be you going 100 kilometers per hour. However, you're not moving. I remember when I came to the monastery for the first time, I remember my mom and my dad telling me, you know, Kuta, you know, you should go and you should do all these meritorious activities, right? You should be the one who goes and washes the toilets. Because why? They wanted me to get rid of this anchor. Because why? Washing the toilet, that's a very low activity. Right? Except when I came to the monastery, I found that the most fun. Because they used to have these pressure guns. So imagine giving a little child a pressure gun. Right? It's a gun that squirts high pressure water. So, is that getting rid of this anchor? No. Instead, I'm the one with the pressure gun. You guys don't take it. It's me who's cleaning it. Now, instead, I'm making this heavier. Again, we have to, because once this anchor becomes heavy, now there are times where this anchor becomes so heavy that no matter how far, no matter how much power your engines have, you don't move at all. When is that? When you do an Aryapada. When you say something, or when you do something, the intention to hurt an Aryan meaning someone who's practicing the path. Now your anchor is like glued to the floor. It is so heavy that you can't move forward. You are maybe, you know, you could be right next to your teachers, staying with your teachers day in, day out, but yet you can't move. Because why these anchors? That's why this is why we have to, yes, until you become an Arahant, these anchors will still be there. This anchor will still be there. However, because we are humans, or because we think we are humans, because we have a mind that has the ability to change, ability to take views and change, we're able to lighten this. Lighten it to the fact that we are able to move. That's why a person's journey to Nibbana is exponential. That's why a person's journey to Nibbana is exponential. Because at the beginning, they have a massive ego. I just want you to take yourself as an example. Because who knows yourself better than yourself, right? At first, we all have a pretty strong ego. And then as you practice, the weight of the anchor starts to decrease. And therefore, your journey becomes faster. And faster and faster. So that's why an Arahant is that, you know, those of you who have done maths, right? You call it the asymptote, right? You know, it doesn't pass that, because why? It goes to infinity. So, the weight of the anchor becomes so little that your journey to Nibbana becomes infinity. Infinity meaning one. Mind's infinity meaning zero. So this is why. Because even then, even while your ego is decreasing, the amount of merits that you do increases. Because now you don't have a specific thing, you know. I'm not so strong, right? So if someone asks me to pick up some chairs, I can't. Yes, you may have a physical, you are physically unable to. Agreed. But you won't label yourself as someone who can't. So you may not be able to lift up 10 chairs stacked together, right? Like some people can do. but you'll be able to lift up one. So you'll do that one, put it down, and you'll take the rest. Because why? Your body needs that rest. Whereas some people can lift up 20 chairs and 20 chair stacks and finish it and not take a single rest. That can happen. But you'll not label yourself, and therefore you're able to do anything. Say, for example, someone here is very sick, right? And are you more willing to help if there are people watching? See, I know the first answer that comes into your help is, no, I help others no matter what. But I want you to really think about it. Really think about it. Because this is something that, again, your mind hides. Sweeps under the bed. It hides it from it because it is such a, you feel it to be such a low thing, you know, when other people are watching you do good things. And so whenever you see someone do that, okay, you immediately go and you say, you know, that's not a good person, right? Because they're doing it for the show. Ask yourself whether you have that same quality. Whether you also do things because of other people, because other people are watching, other people will think wrongly of you. Now, everything I'm saying has both, right? Everything I'm saying has both, because I can't say this is right and this is wrong. Whether what you are thinking is completely right or completely wrong. It is something that for you to decide. You have, say, you have a headache. You're having a migraine, right? And you're, you know, with a group of people, for example, listening to a sermon or having a discussion. Your body suddenly has a need to go to the toilet. Now, yes, some people will not go because why? They want to listen and, you know, take as much as they possibly can in the time they have, right? But you might not go because if I go, what would others think about me? Would they think that that I don't find value in this discussion, or or will they think badly of me and therefore you won't go? Again, our ego is our enemy. Because ego comes from what? Ego stems from what? Jati. It's because you feel that you are this fixed entity, right? The I, the self, that you have to have a certain level. That, you know, I have to be like this. For example, let's say your teachers come up to you and say, okay, today you're going to stand up on this stage and sing Twinkle Twinkle Little Star. How many of you can do it? Honestly, how many of you can come up on this stage and say Twinkle Twinkle Little Star? Oh, no. I am a Sila Shravika Shravika. I'm a monk and Anagarika. We don't sing Twinkle Twinkle. You come up to, I can come up on the stage and give a sermon, 100%. But when it comes to Twinkle Twinkle, no. Why is that? You see, we should be able. Now, again, there are things that are suitable and things that are not suitable. So, for example, unless your teachers tell you to, don't come up on stage and sing Twinkle Twinkle. I hope I'm talking to a very intelligent group of people. I know that, right? You guys are very intelligent, so you won't be doing that. Because there are things that are suitable and that you should and shouldn't do. But if your teachers do tell you to, you should be able to. See, that's why, you know, I can't remember the name of the monk. I think it's a Portilhavr. So there used to be a monk back in the time of the Buddha, right, 2,500 years ago, who was a high ordained, been a monk for many years, and has a very, very deep Dhamma knowledge. However, he can preach, but he doesn't understand. So he was able to make, he had many students who became arahants. So came to him as sotapannas, and he made them into arahants. That's how much, how advanced his Dhamma knowledge is. And so one day he goes to the Buddha and says, Buddha, look, look how great of an asset I am. I have taken many, in many Buddha sasanas, I've done the same thing. Became a great disciple of the Buddhas, and had preached Dhamma and made lots of people arahants. Aren't I very meritorious? Aren't I great, such a great asset? And the Buddha says, Tuchipotila. I don't know, what would be the best, the most nicest way to say that? It would be, I don't say stupid, but that's not giving the right feeling here. Anyone have any suggestions on what tuchye, how we can say tuchye in a very nice way? Huh? Lowly, yes. Lowly portila. And he was like, because his ego shattered. Why the Buddha himself calls him tuchya, meaning low, right? Meaning, yeah, low, stupid, and so his ego shattered there and then. And so then he realized, okay, I know this Dhamma, but I haven't understood. So he goes around and asks his students, please, teach me the Dhamma. Please help me understand this Dhamma. None of them wanted to. Because why? He was their teacher. So think about how much an ego the teacher, how much of an ego the teacher must have had. That arahants have decided that they couldn't teach him. Except one. A 7-year-old. And goes and he says to Portilhavr and says, I will do it. I'll help you. But for me to do that, I need you to walk into this river. Now this river is very deep, right? So Portilhavr started walking. Water as I was at ankle height, he kept walking. Water was at knee height, he kept walking. At waist, kept walking. At shoulder, kept walking. At nose. Then he hears the small sound near him and says, that's enough, come back. This small sound was testing what? His ego. Because why? Me? The teacher of hundreds who had made all these 100 people become arahants to walk in this river? Because a mindset like that can not attain Nibbana. Instead, because that's why ego is the last thing that's eradicated. Because why? That's the thing that stops us from attaining Nibbana in the first place. It's the thing that stops us from accepting nature in the first place. It's ego at fault here. Ego stems from what? Jati. Ego stems from what? The sense of, this is me, this is, I'm here. Because once you have a self, or once you have the sense of self, you need a place to put yourself. You need to put yourself somewhere. Am I above? That's why when two people meet, the first thing you do is you check where am I? Where do I stand? am I above or below this person? If I'm above this person, you treat them one way. If you're below the person, you will always say something or do something to make yourself feel a bit higher. Again, because of ego. Therefore, you cannot accept what your teachers say. Or what? Because who's your teacher? Who is your teacher? Nature is your teacher. You can't accept it. Instead, you want to change it. No, these flowers shouldn't be like this, change. Instead, this is your teacher. This is your teacher. But you can't accept it, because why? No. Okay. You see, your enemy is ego and ego alone. Your enemy is ego and ego alone. Because why? Ego stems from what? Jati. Jati stems from what? Ignorance. So, your enemy is always ignorance. See, this is why it is very important to stay in the association of noble people. Because who else will test it? At home, right, as the oldest, or as the oldest in the family, or as the householder of the family, does anyone test your ego? Does anyone test your ego? If they do, well, you're in a good place to test. If they don't, well, you have to test yourself. Because what we have to really realize is that we need to test ourselves. That's why in schools we have tests. You know, the things that we hate the most, right? Tests, exams. I got an exam next week. Are you? What am I going to do now? Stress. But the reason why we have these tests is to test ourselves. To see how much of this do we know and do we understand. If we don't have a test, it's like doing a degree but not understanding any of it. Like, you need to understand. You need to be able to say that I know this. I know my stuff. But unfortunately, if we don't have something to test it, we believe that we know. So we believe that we know. We believe that we know how cells work. But only when your teacher comes and tests you and asks you, what is the powerhouse of the cell? If you can't say mitochondria, that means you don't know. Or you don't remember. That's why you are tested. That's why there's tests. So this is why in the association of a Kalyana Mitra, in the association of your teachers, is essential. That's why they say, be open with your teachers. How open? Be like glass. Be like glass. Do you think that's easy? To be like glass? So your teacher can see straight through you, that you are transparent, not a single smudge of dirt or a single cloud outside, inside. To be a glass? Because then, when you say something, say for example, you want to say that you did something wrong, you will tell them exactly how it is. If you feel a modicum of anger, a modicum of desire, a modicum of aversion, a modicum of delusion, you go and tell them. You go and tell them. Because then your ego has nowhere to stay. Your ego has nowhere to be. There's no rock here for it to anchor itself onto. Instead, your teachers are your guide. your teachers are what takes you to your liberation. You see, all we have to do on our journey to Nibbana is to follow your teachers. Nothing else. It's actually, Nibbana is not contemplating. Nibbana isn't listening to sermons. What is Nibbana? Following your teachers. It's when you follow your teachers. So if your teacher says from today forth, don't contemplate, you should be able to say, hey, my son, yes, teacher, I'm not going to. If your teacher says from today forth, crawl, right? Wherever you go, crawl. Just like you did as you were a toddler, crawl. You should be able to say, yes, teacher. Because it's always your teachers that take you to where you need to go. Because your teachers are you in the future. Because they've been there, they were like you. They had similar defilements, they've been through what you've been going through, and so they know. So if they tell you something, they know why they say it. Then you can say, well, if I follow exactly what my teacher says, can't my teacher trick me? Can't my teacher lie to me? Can't my teacher say, can't they say something that's going to harm me? Well, if they do, whose fault is that? Your teacher's fault. Of course it's your teacher's fault. Blame your teacher. Your merits. Because of your merits, did you find a teacher, right? And your teacher who gives you the advice. So whose fault is this? Your own. That's why every single day, before I go to sleep, I do the merit transfer. And I think, may by the power of these merits, may my teacher give me what I need. If my teacher isn't someone who can understand me, my merits will either change the teacher, or change the teacher. What do I mean? The teacher will change his qualities or the way he thinks, or the physical teacher will change. And then we get to the best or what we need. That's why it is the teacher. That's why your teachers will tell you to contemplate. Because why? That's what you need to do. If your teachers say, okay, today you're going to do lots of merit activities, you should be able to do what? Merit activities. Contemplate while doing merit activities. You should try to do what? Contemplate while doing merit activities. Whatever your teacher says, anyway, of course, I'll do it. Your teachers are your mothers and fathers. They take care of you just like your parents did. This is why being the association of noble people is very important. It's essential. Without noble association, can you attain Nibbana? Can you? Anyway, so I want you to keep this in your minds, right? Your mind, remember, your mind tricks itself. Your mind always wants to hide all your mistakes under the rug, hide them under the bed, hide them in the cupboards, hide them all. Because why? You want to feel like you're perfect. You want to feel that you have no mistakes whatsoever. I am perfectly fine. But you have to be open. See and be aware of this. See where your mind hides stuff from yourself. and find ways, and using Dhamma, clean those out as well as possible. So, before we start talking about the Dhamma, I have a video to show you. And before we show the video, I want to give you a small explanation of what the video is about. So this video is about a man preparing a drink, right? And he has lots of different equipment and lots of different stuff, and he puts them all together and he makes the perfect drink. So I want you to watch this and see the drink, how the drink is made. Anyone want some water? He said he'll prepare some for you guys if you want. Anyone want some water? No? No? Offering water. See, this is a very, very interesting video. Because this is what you do. No? You do the exact same thing. Now you'll be thinking, I don't cut ice, I don't blend ice, I don't put them all into a pan and make more water. But you do. But not with ice. You do it with what? You take... Yes, you laugh when at last the person drinks from this glass of water and puts his thumb up and says, great. Right? You laugh. But when someone, makes a mango smoothie, do you laugh now? When someone makes a cake, do you laugh now? You say, I wish I had some mango smoothie, a mango lassi, or I wish I had some cake, or a burger, or a hot dog, like a stew or something. But we are doing the exact same thing that this man is doing. How? You see, because we all now realize that, you know, we've all understood that everything is made from causes. Everything is a different arrangement of causes. So what is this man doing? So he's taking ice and he's chopping ice. We don't take ice, but what do? We take, mango, right? Or we take carrots and we start chopping carrots. We put them onto the pan and we do that. But what are we doing? We're taking causes and we're changing the arrangement. Just like the man is chopping ice and making it into water. Here's my question. All right, this is a very interesting question. Did the ice become water? Did the ice become water? Can we have the video without the sound? I just wanted you to do just this is a very interesting question that came up to me. Right? Did the ice become water? Of course, right? Can we have the video without the sound? Pause. The ice became water. Go back, please. Do you have the capabilities to rewind? Stop. Those ice cubes became water. Prove it to me I'm wrong. I say those three ice cubes are what became the water. Is it not? Was it something different?
It was some ice.
You see, this is how ignorance works. It is the perfect trap. Go back. I want to see the ice become water again. Well, if we look at what is truly happening. So, if I was to make, say, food with this, what am I doing here? What I'll be doing is, say, I'm cutting this. Am I destroying the leaf? Am I cutting the leaf? We feel as though we are. Thanks to who? The storyteller, we say, you know, we are cutting the leaf into small, small pieces, finely chopped. Then we put it into a pan and we fry the leaves. I don't know. Me cooking, we don't go together. I was not allowed in the kitchen at home. Here I am, but back then I wasn't allowed to, for good reasons. But, I mean, we cut and what is actually happening here is there a leaf here in the first place? No, it's what? A different arrangement of causes. So, are these causes and these causes different? So the actual building blocks of everything is same. They all come from, let's say, energy for now. So this and this. But you say, no, this is, you know, this is natural and this is man-made, right? This is from crude oil. But where did crude oil come from? So is this different from this or this different from this? Yeah, okay, we burn this. And if you burn this, it's a hydrocarbon, gives you carbon dioxide and water. It goes into the air. Trees use that the carbon dioxide and water and becomes what? Leaf. So are these two different? Can they be different? Because this became this, this became this. So this has one sort of arrangement. And what we do is, when we cut something, we feel as though we're cutting part of this leaf, right? Except you can't. You can't cut leaves. Instead, what you are doing is you're changing the arrangement of the causes. So now it's finely... See, I don't have a scissor or a knife, so I'm going to cut this in using rippers, right? Now, what I have here... And what is this? Are they different? Are they the same though? They're neither the same nor different because this is arrangement of causes and these are also arrangement of causes. So, you see, if I was to rip this, don't you feel as though I'm ripping the leaf here? So, those of you who may have not listened to these sermons may think I'm crazy. Lots of people do, don't worry. But it isn't. This is an arrangement of causes, and this is also an arrangement of causes. So did I rip a piece off the leaf? Or is this now a different arrangement of causes? Okay. Don't you feel weird with this one? This is weird, right? Piece missing. There's something missing here. This is a good leaf. This is a bad leaf. Good, bad. Again, where does this come from? Because why? This is now a broken leaf or a ripped leaf. Like, what has this leaf done to you to make you label it bad? Nothing, because this is an arrangement. So coming back to the video, what is he doing? He's cutting this ice, he's melting the ice, he's doing this to ice? Is that what he's doing? Is he doing things to ice? No, what he's doing is what? He's arranging the causes. He's changing the causes and the flow of energy, yes, to give an effect. See, he works hard. Think about it. Cutting ice, do you think that's easy? Right, he's cutting ice. He's melting ice, he's grating ice, working so hard probably. Thank God this is like a short, but if it was a long thing, he probably took him like a half an hour to make this. And he spends half an hour. And in the end, he drinks water.
people work so hard to cook delicious meals, but in the end, they're eating what? Causes.
I remember, have you seen those slow cookers? Slow cookers? Like, I remember one of my teachers back at school, he had, I think for a week, right, he'd be telling us, okay, today I put this in my slow cooker, right? And he would put one, I think he was slow cooking beef or something. And so he had beef, and then he said, I put this and I closed it. And he cooked it for 7 days, or 4 or 5 days, if I remember. He cooked the meat for 4 to 5 days, and then he ate it. Now, right now, because all of you have some sort of understanding, you'd be like, aparade. What a waste of time. 4 to 5 days to cook some food, and then eat the food, and it's all gone. But for that mind, it's worth it. Because they don't realize, what are they doing? They think they're creating entities, right? They believe they're creating entities. They believe that, oh, I'm cooking this amazing beef stew. But really, what they're doing? Different arrangement of different things. But thanks to ignorance, we can make a story and we say, you know, I cut this leaf into small parts, okay, and then we blended it. Right. We grated it. We put them all into one pan. We fried it. Right. We put it onto a plate and we ate it. And it was delicious. What was delicious? The arrangement of causes. See, we have to understand, right, that thanks to ignorance, we can enjoy the world, right? Thanks to ignorance, we can enjoy the world. We can all make water and drink some water and be happy with the water. This is why, right? He took 15 minutes to make this water. All he could have done was he could have gone to a tap and opened it and got the same thing. Couldn't he? He could. But yet, no. That can't be. Because why? He has to work hard to get water which he drinks to quench his thirst. Then what's food then? Food is something that we use to extinguish the fire of hunger. So does it need to be, you know, 5-star material? Doesn't need to be top class material. Because in the end of the day, it will all end the same way. He's going to drink this, or say he's eating good food. And let's say we're just eating, well, I don't think you can eat this, but let's say you can. Let's say we all eat this. At the end of the day, doesn't your body take it the same way? I don't know, do you put good food up, do you put good food in one hole and this in another? No, you put food in through your mouth. It gets digested and it comes out the same way. There's only one input and one output. But yet, there's something so special about very good food. See, we have to understand it's just an arrangement. Then you can say, well, the taste, right? You know, good food tastes very good. Right, it's delicious. But yet, it's this feeling of taste is what? Just a mental perception. Just to get the taste, this person is working so hard just to get taste of water. Just to taste water, he's gonna blend the ice. He's gonna grate the ice. Use that lighter to melt ice. To taste water. You see, once you really understand that this is all an arrangement of causes, now you're not going after it. You're not going after, you're not going to go back home and spend 5 days cooking food. Instead, you'll make what you need. So for example, some food will take longer to prepare. For example, if you're having salads or mellum, they need to be finely cut. Right? So it'll take effort. But that's because your body needs it like that. But now you won't go looking for decoration, meaning like you won't have, if you had a choice of eating, you know, normal papadam and, you know, those really shaped ones, like that shape looks like flowers and bubbles and whatnot. Now you look at both of these and you think, either is okay. Not, you know, these bubble ones, they look good, they'll taste better and whatnot. Instead, you will have the feeling that these two are the same. So if you had these good ones, the good ones, you'll take it. If you just had the normal ones, you'll take it. Because why? You understand what the body needs is nutrients. Therefore, you're not going to search day in, day out for something extravagant. Because you realize the reality of things. Causes that these are all just different arrangements. Because if you really think about it, these are all different arrangements. Whether it's this or this, this or this. But yet you feel three different entities here. If I was to ask you to choose one leaf, 99% of you would choose this one. Because why? This feels whole. This feels, you know, this feels right. This feels wrong. But didn't this used to look like this? And let's say we put this into the floor and somehow it grows and it becomes this now. So it was this and it will be this. But yet you feel that this is different from this. See, that's why when someone does something wrong, thanks to jati, we give them a permanent label. And we say, this person is like this. This person's always like this. Just think about the people that you live with. Husbands, wives, mothers, fathers, sons, daughters. When you make, I used to have this great question, right? I do one mistake. And my parents say, we can't trust you anymore, right? Like, you know, you did this, so we can't trust you anymore. I make the mistake once, and that was an accident. But now you label. Husbands and wives, don't you label the other person makes a mistake. You now give them a permanent label that they can't erase, thinking that they are like this. They are forever like this. Because why? This and this are too different. This is always going to be like this. Because why? These are entities now. You don't see them as cause and effect. That this is an arrangement, this is also an arrangement. Arrangement giving rise to this effect. But yet you give it, you know, this leaf is a bad leaf. It's ripped, look, its parts are falling off. It's a bad leaf. And now it's forever what? A bad leaf. Never can it be good again. For example, this idea of labeling also comes with this ego. It goes hand in hand with the ego. Right? Let's say a pickpocket joins the Sila Shravika. Or Sila Shravika, or Sila Huasi, or the Anagarikas. Now, don't you feel this? That something's wrong with it? So whenever they do something, you look at them using that, like, you give them the side eye, and you look just in the corner of your eye. Because why? You've labeled them. But can you label people? Can you label them? This and this are both what? An arrangement. You see, once you start to realize the reality of nature, now you won't work so hard to receive this amazing food. And you won't label things like this either. You see them all as what? Manifestations. A different arrangement of what? Causes. So coming back to the 7-year-old and Guru Handra. You see the 7-year-old, you see Guru Handra. Which one is better? Which one is better? We have the 7-year-old and Amada Sanhandra. Right? Which one is better? Which one's better? They are all different arrangements. Arrangements of different causes. So, can't we be... Because once you understand it's all arrangements, ego goes out the door. Because why? It doesn't matter who. It doesn't matter what. It's an arrangement. Someone gives you half a leaf or a full leaf. In your head is what? An arrangement. Arrangement of causes. So what? So what? Oh, he likes, they like the person who gave the full leaf, right? That's why they gave a full leaf, but they gave me a half leaf because they don't like me. No, you see them both as what? An arrangement. So what? We have to continuously put this into practice. Right? Look at the world through the eyes of reality. Because once you see everything to be cause and effect, once you see everything to be manifestations, now you don't want to change nature. Instead, you accept it. You accept nature. And nature will no longer affect you. Nature can no longer affect you. See, this is the mindset that we have to all have. We have to put this into practice. Seeing everything as a manifestation, as a different arrangement of causes. So today is also Poya. What's the difference between Poya and a normal day? What's the difference? Poya, you know, the moon is so big, right? It's a full moon day. It's all big and white, you know. It's big and beautiful and whatnot. But normal days, you have a crescent or no moon or half moon or three quarters of a moon. Is that why? What's the difference? For children, right? Children, I remember when I used to talk to children, they used to say that, you know, when it's a crescent moon, the moon is a crescent. And when it's a half moon, the moon is half. And only once they get taught in school that, you know, the moon is still there, it's just the reflection of the earth and whatnot. And until then, they think that this is the world. This is the moon. They don't see it as what? An arrangement. So, what's the difference between Poya day and a normal day? Is there a difference? There is the difference. There is a difference. What's that? Jati. Jati feels that, you know, Poya days are very special. There's something very special about Poya days. But remember, Poya days, although they may not be special. Meaning, there's no difference between normal day and poor days. But it's a good thing we have Poya. Why? Because that's a day on our calendar that we can use to remind ourselves and trigger some sort of contemplation. So last Poya, I think, no, before last Poya, I had asked you to, every Poya, to remind yourselves, am I doing enough for my salvation? Think about it. From then to now, a whole month has passed. Time slips through our fingers like this. So, again, this Poya, right, at the end of today, before you fall asleep, ask yourself, am I doing enough for my salvation? What more can I do? What more can I do for my own salvation? Ask yourself this. Because we want to be like this, exponential. We want to go faster and faster and faster, right? I don't know about you, but I don't want to stay in vexation forever. I want to come out. So, I want to be exponential. I want to be limitless. Right. I do believe we have run out of time as well. So, we talked about ego. We talked about water, right? We all found a new way to make water, right? Right. So, everyone write the recipe down. It's a very, 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 yes, it's, don't tell anyone else, right? It's our recipe to make water. So everyone have your pieces of paper and start writing down the ingredients you need. Did everyone write this down? Take notes, right? How long you have to blend it? To what texture do you need it to? How long you have to keep it on the pan? All written down. So we all know how to make perfect water. Save ourselves. See, that's why when you practice the path, you feel compassion automatically. Because why? People don't know. They don't know, and so they suffer so unnecessarily. But do you think he knows he's suffering? That's the thing. All sentient beings, they deserve to know the truth. Or else they're suffering so unnecessarily. That's the thing. Help others understand. Be someone who can spread the teachings. Either through words or by actions. Because actions speak louder than words. Okay, so without wasting any more time, let's take a few moments to transfer merits and conclude. Let's take a moment to transfer all the merits we required by making offerings to the infinite virtues of the Noble Triple Gem, chanting Pirith, listen Dharma, and engaging in various meritorious deeds today. So first and foremost, let's remind ourselves how incredibly fortunate we are to be in receipt of Buddhist teachings. And with immense gratitude, let's transfer the merits to the Bhikshu Bhikshunis, Upasakas, Upasakas, who since time immemorial have protected and preserved the sublime teaching of the Buddha and passed it down to the generation of a noble lineage in the form of the Tripitaka, which is thankfully available to us today to study, to understand, to comprehend Dhamma. Let's also take a moment to transfer merits to all the members of the Mahasangha present throughout the world, including all chiefs of chapters, who have dedicated their life to no path and committed themselves to the betterment of all sentient beings. Let's not forget among them will be the monks and nuns residing in local temples and nunneries who have always been by your side through thick and thin, come in your shine. Let's also take one chance of merits to Guru Sannanse, as well as all the other monks present at the monastery, as well as the Anagarikas attached to the monastery. Let's also take one chance of merits and express our gratitude to those who make great effort to disseminate the teaching of the Buddha, be that by transliterating sermons, sharing them out with others, inviting others to join them, may through power of the merits. If any have been born in the woeful plane, may they redeem themselves and be born in the blissful plane, may by the power of the merits, may they abstain from the meritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nirvana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let's also take a moment chance of merits we require to our devotees, friends of the monastery, who forsake of merits, continue to sustain the Mahasangha. This includes every one of you who have contributed to the construction of the monastery, those of you who provide the Mahasangha with shelter, arms, roads, medicines, as well as those who pass in their know-hows and their well-wishes. make the palamas, may they abstain from the meritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, enter in the supreme bliss of Nirvana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let's also take a moment to transfer merits to our mothers, fathers, husbands and wives, brothers and sisters, sons, daughters, grandparents, uncles, aunts, cousins, nephews, nieces, our elders, friends and acquaintances, employees, employees, and all those who helped us, supported us, assisted us in any shape or form. By the power of these merits, may they be healed of any physical or mental ailments, may they overcome any obstacles in their spiritual progress, may they abstain from our meritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let's also take a moment to transfer merits to the devas, brahmins, spirits, demons, primarily the Sakradeva, as well as numerous gods and deities who committed to protect and fulfill the sum of the sasana. Let's also take a moment to transfer merits to our garden deities who keep a watchful eye over us and keep us out of harm's way. May the power of these merits, may they prosper in divine power and wisdom. May they abstain from the meritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and attain supreme bliss of Nirvana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let's also take one chance of merits to our ancestors who predeceased us, to all that have been friends and family to us in this infinite long journey in samsara. And also let's take a moment to transfer merits to all the members of the armed forces as well as the police force who sacrificed their lives to protect the peace and harmony of our nation. May all those lost life in the war be their friend or foe. Rejoice in the merits required today. Let's also take a moment to transfer merits to all those lost life in natural calamities such as tsunamis, earthquakes, landslides, pandemics. Reminding ourselves among them will be those who have been friends and family to us in this infinite long journey in samsara. May the power of the merits, if any have been born in the wolf of flame, may they redeem themselves and be born in bliss of flame. May by the power of the merits, may they abstain from the meritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and attain supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And finally, let's all resolve, may the power and blessing of all the merits required throughout the day. We've been witness the event of many hundreds of thousands of Vaishnava nuances, Arhat main nuances, in this blessed land itself. And finally, may through all the power of all the merits required throughout the day, you and I and everyone who had made this program a success become an Arhat Nuanse, Arhat Main Nuanse, in his very life, in the era of the Gautama, the Supreme Buddha itself. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. May the blessings of the Uchupacham be with you all. The Mahasangha will now transfer the blessings to you.
Raga ginnin midetnva. Dvesh ghinnen midetnva, moh ghinnen midetnva, nibhan param sukhayin sukhita taravetnva, nibhan param sukhayin sukita taravetnva, mamada siyalu loka siyalu satvayo, nibbana parama sukhayin sukita taravetnva, nibbana parama sukhayin sukita taravetnva. Raga gini niveva, dvesha gini niveva, moha gini niveva, nivan sapa labeva, nivan sapa labeva, nivan sapa labeva.
Tunnonge susi ananta mahaguna belen sil loka sil satyam nibbana paramasukhin sukataravetva. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.